Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Today is Saturday, February the 6th, 2010, and I am your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from snowy Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It started snowing here, I want to say, around 10 or 11 o'clock of last night, Friday night. Still snowing, supposed to snow all the way through the night. I feel like we've got about, 15 inches of snow already, and we still have several hours more snow that we're supposed to get. So I think we're going to really get hit pretty hard here today. And we have a wonderful guest with us, talk about contrast, Mr. Charles Chapman, who is coming all the way from sunny California. So it's snowing here in Philadelphia, where I'm hosting Off the Shelf, and our guest, Charles, is enjoying the warm, sunny weather in California. To tell you a little bit about Charles Chapman, he's the author of the books The Depths of My Soul and The Voices of South Central. Charles is also a poet, a freelance writer, and a literary entrepreneur. He was born and raised in Los Angeles, California, and he is someone who he does what it takes to encourage a strong appreciation for literacy, something that is so a powerful tool for people to help people move forward. Anyway, he helps to encourage a strong appreciation for this in communities and individuals. He is the executive director of the Los Angeles Black Book Expo, and he is online at Charles Chapman, and his last name is spelled C-H-A-T-M-O-N. CharlesChapman.com, and you can check out the Los Angeles Black Book Expo, which is scheduled for August the 21st of this year, online at labbx.com. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Charles.
Well, thank you, Denise.
So happy to have you here with us. I was going to start with talking about your poetry, a man who loves poetry. I know when I was growing up, and even today, women love to hear men write or recite poetry. And as a kid, I always thought it was rare for a guy to be into poetry. Do you still think that people find it odd, even though there are a lot of great male poets, Langston Hughes, and I can think of many, many others, but do you think people still find it fascinating or odd when a man actually writes and enjoys creating poetry?
Well, I think there are always going to be people that enjoy what men have to say, and the poems that I've written in The Depths of My Soul and The Voices of South Central, people like that because people like what a man has to say with depth and his feelings about love of the world around him. So all the venues that I've been in so far, and the spoken word poetry venues that I've been in, women have been excited but also been very curious about what men have to think and say, and very positive response.
That's good. I think that is something that people would like to see more of. I guess men to express themselves more, and I think writing is very healing. And being a lot of times that men are taught not to really express themselves, that can be an excellent tool to help men to really express things that they're feeling that they would otherwise hold inside that might over time begin to hurt them. I wanted to ask you, how old were you when you started writing poetry, and what were some of your earlier poems about?
I started writing poetry at 14 because I started writing short stories earlier, and then poetry just came to me. I just started writing, and all of a sudden the words started flowing out of me, and I recited my first poem to about age 15 to a church group, and then people liked it, so I continued to write poetry since then, and the poems from Depths of My Soul, the first book, they are from, I think, at age 17, when I read my poems in front of a YMCA campfire, and the response was so great that I decided to keep these poems and publish them.
Okay. I want to get into your book specifically, but I also want to talk about a few years ago, it was said by the mainstream book publishers that African Americans really didn't read, although we knew that that was not the case. But there were, and I grew up in the 1970s, and there were very few African American authors published when I grew up. And I want to say, I think Maya Angelou was one of the first ones I heard about, and then Gwendolyn Brooks and that was people who were still living, not people who had passed on. And then I found out about Toni Morrison, but that was pretty much it. And then later on, I came to discover, of course, not in the 70s, but later, Eric Jerome Dickey, Carl Weber, and Walter Mosley, just to name a few of the African-American male authors. But a lot of them, not certainly not all authors for females and males, African-American heritage, they came about, it was like the explosion after people began to self-publish or independently publish their books, and the authors started writing, getting editors to edit their books, and they started marketing their own books and selling their own books, as Elin Harris did to beauty shops, and that's how his books really caught on. And then mainstream publishers, of course, came on and supported and bought these authors' books. But I want to, even now, Charles, I don't see a whole lot of books written by African American male writers, although I do see more, but the majority, I would say, are still by women. Why do you think we don't see more books published by African American men on the market? Even though we have with us the mainstream publishing, self-publishing, print-on-demand that you can go through, why do you think we don't see more books by African American? Is it that more men aren't writing books, or what do you think the reason for this is?
Well, I have been different a little bit. There are men writing books, but they're writing urban lit. Mostly that's the hot genre right now. A few are writing Christian books, and some, like myself, are just writing short stories and other poems. But there are men out there. It's just that they haven't been promoted or they haven't recognized as much as the women writers are. And I think we have to turn the spotlight on these men writers, and I can name a few, but I've been accused of name-dropping in the past by good friends of mine. So I would just say that if you go to any bookstore out there and you look at the urban lit genre, you'll see there's some men out there who are telling their tales, writing stories, and really getting the word out there about their experience. So I would happen to differ on that a little bit, but there are men who are writing books right now.
Right, right. That the numbers, if they are, is high, I guess, as the numbers of women who are also writing books. I'm not sure what is driving it, but when I go to the bookstores or you go to a Walmart or anywhere, I tend to see more of the books authored by, I'm talking about just African-American books, by African-American women. I would like to see more by African-American men. I don't know if that it might be because women in general, irregardless of culture, might buy more books than men do, or do men simply buy books in specific genres. Like I wouldn't imagine they might, that men buy a lot of romance novels, and that is the number one seller across any culture of nonfiction books. I mean, fiction books is romance. I don't know if men buy a lot of romance or if they are more into sci-fi and those types of books. I'm not sure. So that might also have some bearing upon that. Now I want to go into talking about your book, The Depths of My Soul. I wanted to ask you, when did you write it? I think you said your short stories you started writing before you were 14 and your poems when you were 14. But when did you write The Depths of My Soul, and what's the themes of the poems about? And if you could just share a little bit from The Depths of My Soul with our listeners here at Off the Shelf.
Okay, The Depths of My Soul was published in 2001. And the two sections of the book, The Depths of Society and The Depths of Romance, not necessarily in that order, I wrote a lot of poems when I was younger, so I wanted to divide the book into feelings of romance and then feelings about how I feel about the world around me at a young age. So I started off with a character called The Observer, and he will guide you to the two. He has a poem, and then he'll just talks about how the book is structured, and then we go into The Depths of Romance with my first poem, Thank You, which I'll read in a minute, and then my other poems, The Depths of Society, which, again, I talk about the world. So I'd like to, if I have a chance, to read Thank You.
Oh, please do, please do.
Okay.
And what section is this coming from?
This is The Depths of Romance, one of the first poems in the book, The Depths of My Soul. And it starts off like this. Holding you close, hand running down your cheek. Thank you for picking me up when you knew I was weak. For all those nights when the world was on my back, You told me to move on and press on with my attack. Girl, without you, I would be lost. If I didn't have your love to keep me going, I would have paid an awful cost. Treating you right always because of what you mean to me. You lifted up my spirits in so many ways. I wish to grow closer to thee. I just want to thank you and give you worthy praise. Both sexes can be a bit unkind toward each other in these troublesome times and days. But you have been good to me, and I pray that, as I hold you tight, I will continue to devote my love to you, supporting you in the path. That's right. That's it.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's it. Yeah, so that's the first poem that's of society. And all through the book, or all through the section, I write poems about breakups, about how a man truly feels about a woman, and it's really, I try to get the range from how a man feels about all these different subjects of love, and the response from this section alone has been very positive and overwhelming. I appreciate the people who bought the book and told me, so I really appreciate that.
Okay. I enjoyed your poem. I thought you weren't finished. That's the reason I apologize.
Okay.
I thought I was interrupting you. I enjoyed your poem very much. I wanted to ask you, who are some of the male writers before we go into your other book and then the Black Book Expo? Because I also want to talk to or get some tips and advice to our listeners who are writers who want to find out ways that they can promote their books at book festivals and how to actually even organize and market and operate a book festival. Before we get to that, I wanted to ask you, who are some of the male writers and other artists who helped shape your work as a writer, Charles, and what was it about these artists that touched you so deeply?
Well, Shakespeare, love the Shakespeare sonnets growing up in the plays, too, but also men like Langston Hughes and Ralph Ellison and Richard Wright, the legendary writers that don't get enough credit today. I love reading from the passages. I'm starting to get back into the Harlem Renaissance, too, so all the writers of the Harlem Renaissance, I'm starting to, especially the male writers, I'm trying to get back to knowing them because they written so many good things, and they try to use their art to help promote a healthy feeling about ourselves as African Americans, also to the world, to express to the world that we're more than the images that they're giving us today, and we're just trying to promote a healthy, positive image, and that's what I like about these male writers, because coming from their perspective, and even going back to some of the earlier authors, too, like I would say his name. I won't butcher any names, but as far as the early writers from like colonial period and all the other periods in English in our literature, then I'm really appreciating how these men wrote because, again, these words that really edify you and encourage you, and I'm really getting back to that again. So it's really the male writers across the board in our heritage. I'm trying to get to know again and really enjoying their work.
Yeah, I would say when you said the Harlem Renaissance, that was a period of time, and I would like to see us either get back to that spirit of writing. The writing had a lot of depth to it, and male writers were really they were equally spotlighted as with a female writer during that time. I think you generally when you say Harlem Renaissance, most people they think they will think of Langston Hughes and these types of writers, Richard Wright, these type of authors, and they were just had so they touched what the human condition, what was going on in people's lives. And like you said, to give a different perspective or another image of African-American people, people from the African descent, other than what we saw in the media over and over. And back then, I think we saw the urgency of that more with the civil rights movement coming up and with segregation. I think we saw the urgency more. And maybe people don't see the urgency so much now, but we do still have a lot of negative images that influence people. So I think it is still important to have these powerful, conscious writers creating these types of work today. The Voices of South Central, I have to tell you, Charles, that is an intriguing title to me. Every time I see that title, it jumps out at me. I wanted to ask you, did you grow up during a time similar to what's reflected in the movie Boys in the Hood, when I think South Central Los Angeles, I think if I'm remembering correctly, that's where the movie took place. And if so, if you grew up in that location, would you say that Boys in the Hood accurately reflected the area during that time?
Oh, yes, it did. Yeah. John Singleton did a great job with the movie. And it's one of my all-time great movies because it really does talk about life in the neighborhood that way. There are some positives, some negatives too, but it's where we live, and where I lived for a long time. I saw through the response from the movie, but actually the Voices of South Central, I wrote a group of poems called the South Central Poems back in the late 80s when all this stuff was happening, you know, the gang violence, the drive-bys, and really what I did was I wrote these poems as a way, as a response to all the experts who appeared on national networks like ABC, NBC, all the rest, and had their documentaries or what have you about the area and not really talk to the people in the community. And I felt my poems or this book, The Voices of South Central, was a response to all that. And in fact, in the very last page of the Voices, there was an article I wrote for my college newspaper back in the late 80s, talking about life goes on in South Central, and it gives really my view, because I'm from the area, about what South Central is like, and it really just, I think, brings it all together as far as the highs, the lows, and people still in South LA, now they call South LA today, they are trying to do positive things. I read a story about some old gangbangers who, and this is like before the Bloods and Crips, who are trying, they started a nonprofit group, and they're trying to change things in the community. They're talking to young people. They're trying to inspire these young men and women to do better with their lives and really encourage and uplift the community that they're in because they feel they have a stake in it. And even some people who were a part of Bloods and Crips, they also are contributing to the neighborhood too. So it's good to see that out of all the madness of the 80s and partially part of the 90s before the unrest, that there are some people, even who have lived their lifestyle, that are trying to change their lives for the better and trying to really turn the community around. And I hope that the Voices of South Central does the same thing.
I would agree as well, Charles. Were you there in the area? I know you said you did live in South Central before the gangs. I mean, the gangs were initially created to really protect the African-American community from night riders, when there was more violence along racial lines in the country. And then they just, I don't know how the gangs morphed into where they turned, were created to protect the community, and then they actually turned on each other. How that happened exactly, I'm not sure. But were you there in South Central before this transition happened with the gangs? And how do you see now? Is the community building back up, or has the gang violence really torn it down? I know there are always positive people in areas who are trying to build a neighborhood up or keep it strong. But would you say that gang violence, I won't say irreparable damage, but damage that might take a lot of years to repair?
Right. Well, in one of the poems, Blue Rag, Red Rag, White Sheet, we talk about what gangs have done over the years. And we write about the things that they go through, and also, too, the violence and the toll of violence is had on people in their lives and the way it's brought down the community. I would think that, basically because all the gang violence has happened in the past where they started to turn against each other. First it was turf, and then it was the drugs, and then it was just really gang against gang until the unrest happened. We had a truce for a while. Then you start to see some positive out of that, but getting back to your point, the gang violence really brought down the neighborhood, really brought down the community for the better part of the late 70s to about the early 90s. And, yeah, the voice is a response to that. It's a response to all the negativity, but it's also to find a positive within that and really trying to say, hey, look, you know, ABC, NBC, all these networks that said everything negative about the community, they have the experts who think they know about where we live, really don't know. And this is my side of the story. And
okay.
That's what I try to portray.
And that leads into my next question before we start talking about the book festivals and how writers can market and increase their book sales, market their books and increase their book sales. To me, and I open this up to you and for our listeners here at Off the Shelf to think themselves about this, written, visual, any form of media has a powerful impact on our imagination and our beliefs and beliefs. Are thoughts that you just think over and over and over until you just say that this is true. For example, a person that you hear the same story over and over and over, that has a strong enough emotional tie to it, a person can just absolutely believe the story. And you mentioned some of these media outlets like the ABC, NBC, and I'm not targeting any of these. I'm just saying Newsweek. A lot of times when we see something on CNN or read it in Time, we just say, oh, that's the truth. It was in the New York Times. It was in Newsweek. It has to be true. But then when it has a lot of emotional tie to it and you keep seeing the same images, hearing the same things, you keep hearing the same stories over and over and over again, and you never, ever request any background info. You do no research, nothing. These stories are being created by humans just like they're read and listened to by humans. You just accept it as the absolute truth. That tells me how much power there is in the word. It, whether you're using a pen, using story images, or you're just verbally saying something. There's so much power there because people don't go back and research stuff. They just say, oh, it's got to be true, and they just accept it as true, whether it is or not. Do you, Charles, as a writer, do you realize, and I'm sure you do, just how much power you have each time you sit down to write?
Yeah, I do, because the words come from my heart. And what I always try to tell people at our writers' workshops is to, like you said, do your research. Because if you do your research, then you can write out fact. And in fact, whether you put it in a story form or a nonfiction form, you have the power because you're telling the world your experience. For example, I mean, even though I lived in South LA for a long time, there were still things about it I didn't know. So that's why I had to do research about all the old theaters that happened before the first unrest in 65. And like the old theaters where it used to be a community, buildings and theaters and on every corner. And I didn't know that until I started doing research. So
wow.
When I tell our people about research in our writers' workshops, it gives them the power. They know what happened before. So when someone reads their book, they can be fascinated and they can learn a little bit of educational info too. So we always try to make sure that they have the power to research. And also the power of imagery that you said, if you repeat things over and over again, well, that's why books like Depths of My Soul, which addresses how a man feels about a woman, and the Voices of South Central, which addresses about the community, how people look at the community differently once they see images of objective images of both negative and positive, and then they can make up their own mind.
Right.
That's when they have the power of the reader. That's when you have, as an author or a writer, you have that power to shape the reader's mind, but also give them an objective view and let them think for themselves. And
yes.
That's what you want to do.
Yes, yes, I so agree. We are speaking with Charles Chapman. He is the author of the books The Depths of My Soul and The Voices of South Central. Charles is also a poet, a freelance writer, and a literary entrepreneur. He is on, and he is also the executive director, which we're going to talk about this next, of the Los Angeles Black Book Expo. Charles Chapman is online, and I encourage our listeners here at Off the Shelf to visit him online at Charles, and it's spelled just the way it sounds, Charles Chapman, Chatmon. Chatmon, CharlesChapman.com. The Los Angeles Black Book Expo is scheduled for August 21st of this year, and it's online at LA labbx.com, labbx.com. So we're going to go back to Charles and going to start talking about the book festivals. He's worked on more book festivals besides the Los Angeles Black Book Festival. I know you've attended several of these over the years. I love book festivals, I got to tell you. I love them. And you also have attended the West Hollywood Black Book Fair, the Black Writers on Tour, West Coast Black Writers Festival, and, of course, the Los Angeles Times Festival of Books, which is a huge festival out in Los Angeles. I wanted to ask you, from your experience, would you say that book festivals, because you're an author and you're a book festival organizer, would you say that book festivals are great events for writers to attend so that they can broaden their readership and increase their book sales immediately and long term? Would you say, what were your thoughts about this, Charles?
Oh yeah, I love book festivals. I love them. I think for new authors too, it's a way to expose yourself to a wide range of people, and also get your word out there, and also network with other authors who are there to learn from them. And I love book festivals. Even helped out with the first annual the Merck Park Book Fair. I've assisted with other book fairs or events that had literary components in them, like the Community Day in Los Angeles, literacy awareness. I've helped with that, and several other events that I've consulted with. So just going out to a book fair, it's fun for the family, because you're helping kids learn about the joy of reading, the joy of literacy, and that's one thing that I've always tried to have for the LA Black Book Expo, is continue our children's literary zone, because we want the new generation, the new authors of the 21st century, to learn about literature and to enjoy and love it, and you know, try to inspire them, encourage them to be writers themselves. And as far as book festivals, it's a great feeling for authors, for new authors to come out and just to really share their book. And who knows, there's some certain tips I'm sure we'll talk about for new authors to get the word out, but it's good exposure for them, and I really
enjoy
them.
I wanted to ask you, particularly, I remember those early book festivals I went to, and I was just a bag of nerves and didn't know what was going to happen, and oh my gosh, if somebody comes by my table, what do I say? And if nobody comes by my table, why ain't they coming by my table? So I wanted to ask you, just to talk to our writers, seasoned writers, new and beginning writers, what steps can writers take, even those who have attended book festivals, there may be things they can do differently to increase their book sales. What specific steps would you say that writers should take to get the most out of attending book festivals so they can increase their sales? Should they? I've heard people say, don't sit down at your booth. Stand up the whole time and talk to people as they're coming by. Do you pass out flyers? Do you pass out bookmarkers? What do you do? Do you let people read chapters from your books? Do you hand out, like, excerpts so they can read and come back and buy your book? What advice would you give to writers attending book festivals, specific steps they can take to increase their book sales?
Well, I was a wallflower, you know, at first, standing behind my table, just hoping that people would come by and take a look at my book. But over time, I realized that's not the case. What you do have to do is you have to go to the other table, go to the author beside you or the exhibitor or vendor, and grab the card, create a database, have a list out for people to sign, and also cards, flyers, promotional material. That always helps too, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to build an audience for your book. And the way that you can build an audience is that you can't stand there behind your table. You have to be active at a book festival, network, find out what other events are going on, find out how a seasoned author, how they're doing other events or places they went to, talk with them, get some knowledge from them so that you can have that knowledge at least. And many times when, just speaking of my own experience, when I went to book fairs, I was a little angry because nobody was buying my book. you probably notice how people walk by your table and they look at your book and then they say, "Oh, nice book," and then you walk off. Or you know,
or they'll be back later to buy the book, like 10 centuries later.
Or I got to go to the ATM machine and I got to get my ATM, my money. I ain't never come back, you know. Another thing too is that they always look down. They don't look at you. They always look down, and they look. I just say, why am I here? You know. So, yeah, those are frustrating times for an author. But I really believe if you build a list, you grab cards, you talk with different authors. Those are a few of the steps that you can take as a new season author to really build a list and build some interest in your book.
Yeah, I would say, just to piggyback on what you said, I've heard people say this who attend the Book Expo of America, which is one of the largest, if not the largest, book event in the United States. That's usually held in New York, but it's also been held in Chicago, and I think they held it in L.A. One year as well. But that you go there to network with other authors because other authors will know about events that are coming up. I know my author friends do. We do this with each other. We tell each other about events that the other one never even heard of, and then we'll either attend events together or one of us will go and let the other one know how it was so the following year we can decide if we want to go back again. That's one way you can do it, to network with other authors. I definitely encourage any writer to network with other authors. Now, it might not lead into a lot of book sales immediately, but that is a long-term effective way to learn about new events, to build your readership, and increase your book sales networking with other authors. Because as much as you might go on the Internet and off the Internet to find out about events that you can go to, I don't think one person is going to know about as many events as perhaps 10 people together would come to know about. So that's the number one thing. You go to the events. Make some goals before you go there while you're going there, not just to hope that people buy your book, but say, I'm going there, I'm going to network. And then you get out and you go to other authors' tables. Maybe you just take a break once every 2 hours while you're at the event and go visit some other authors' tables and pass out your cards and make introductions. So that's one thing you could do. The second thing is passing out bookmarkers. I think bookmarkers work better than business cards at these types of events. So pass out some bookmarkers. Make some copies of, I don't know, just maybe 3 pages of your book and just give them out to people so they can read. I've had people read excerpts from books I've written and come back and say, I like this, and then buy the book. So that gives them a chance to step away from the table and read the book in comfort and then come back and decide whether they want to buy it or not. And then you have to get up and talk to people as they come by your table. Tell them about your book. You're gonna have to do that, and then that can generate interest in your book, and you sell it. That's probably one of the number one ways I've sold books at events, not just sitting at my table with some nice, colorful backgrounds and posters, but to get up and start talking to people as they pass, tell them about my book, and then their interest grows, and then I land the book sale. So those are ways that I also would encourage, steps I would encourage people to take to build readership and increase their book sales. And you said another great one, Charles, when you said bring a list for people to sign, let them sign their name and give them you their email address or some way you can keep in touch with them. You can send them newsletters. You can send them just brief updates from time to time. That builds trust. That builds a relationship. That builds your readership. That was an excellent tip. I really, really appreciate you sharing that. I wanted to ask you next, when did you become the executive director for the Los Angeles Black Book Festival?
Well, September 2006, I received an email from the former executive director, Itabari Mzulu, who was a professor at UCLA, former professor at UCLA, who founded the Book Expo. And he asked me, because I was doing work with my writers group, and that was another tip I wanted to say, I have a writer's group or part of a writer's group called the California Writers Collective, and we do our workshops every single year in L.A. And when I received the email from Dr. Zulu because of my work for the collective, and he asked me if I would like to take over the expo. And I was there for the first couple of L.A. Black Book Expos as an exhibitor, and I enjoyed the event. I really liked being around the people. We attracted people from all over the country, and we still do. So he asked me, and I accepted 2 days later. I had to really think about it. I knew what a challenge it would be to take over this event, but I really wanted to help the expo, and I did. And for the past 3 years now, going to my fourth year, this August, it's really a joy to take over this event as much as a challenge it has been the past 5 years in Exhibition Park, and we've enjoyed our time there. We're now moving to the Sheraton Gateway LAX Hotel, and for 2010, because we're growing. Ever since I've taken over, we've decided we have grew in our committee and also in our. I think people know about us more now since we've done a lot of aggressive networking through social sites like Facebook and MySpace and email blast, and really just getting the word out there. So we're growing that way, and that's why I had to find a bigger venue.
Congratulations. That cruise, congratulations to you. For that, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Time to well, they like George and Louise, time to move on up. Y'all gotta move to a bigger place, because then that's a good thing. Gotta change, because things are getting better and they're starting to expand. So that's a good thing. I've often wondered this. I have a friend who started the Indianapolis Book Festival, Dolores Thornton. She's the author of a book called Ida May. She started it. They had nothing. She just put it together herself. Just phenomenal. And how many people come out? CB Book Distribution for their book fair that they do in New York City, and then yourself with the Los Angeles Black Book Festival, Book Expo. I wanted to ask you, what does an executive director do? I see on your website, and again, to our listeners, I encourage you to go check out Charles's website, charleschapmon.com, CHATMON.com, and the Los Angeles Black Book Expo. You will see the sponsors that I'm talking about, and it's LABBX.com. Again, that's LABBX.com, the Los Angeles Black Book Expo, which will be held on August 21st, 2010, Charles said, at the Sheraton in Los Angeles. You can get more information on the exact location for the festival at the website, as well as see the many sponsors that they have. So I know that's one thing that an executive director does, and kudos to you guys. But what other things does an executive director do to pull a book festival this size together?
Well, I do have a very dedicated committee, and I pull them together, and whatever cast they have, I let them run it. I think my style is to just get the best people or volunteer to do the job and in their field, and things like to do, like we may have someone who helps with the children, we may have someone that helps with just getting the flyers together, we may have someone who just really specific tasks, and I just delegate. That's all I do. But my role specifically is to tell people about the expo, trying to talk to potential partners and sponsors about the event so they can help support. Like we had Barnes & Noble, they reached out to us last year. And we had a series of book fairs there at one of the stores at the Grove in Hollywood. And we had a relationship form there, which went very well. And you can see on my YouTube page, and I'll say something about that in a minute. And also, we had a new author spotlight at the bookstore. So it was a way to help generate interest about our event, which did, for people who were at the store, we had the mailing. We had a list. People signed the list, and we put them on the mailing list and they contact them. So my job is really just to help get the word out, promote the expo, talk to different people, and help it grow. And in my committee, which you can find on the website, they have really done a good job with, again, specific events like the Children's Literary Zone, spoken word event, and also getting the exhibitors together and making sure that the exhibitors are well taken care of.
I wanted to ask you next, Charles, and again, the website is very well done, by the way. I wanted to ask you, for people who might want to do a book festival in the area where they live, perhaps they live in a city where there is no such thing, and they want to start that, to encourage reading in the community and in children and in adults as well, and to encourage people who might have that gift to be a writer, to begin to let that blossom. How do you go about gaining sponsorships? I don't know why in my mind I always imagine that to be the hardest part. Other than securing a location, I always imagine that getting sponsors is the second most difficult part, which may or may not be the case. But how do you go about getting sponsors for an event like this?
Well, sponsors today, as you know, Denise, for the economy, they're really hard to come by. Because they're trying to hold on to what they have as well. But sponsorships in the past, you write letters, especially with nonprofit, which Dr. Zulu's or his nonprofit organization is a fiscal sponsor of our expo. We were able to send out letters to different corporations. We were able to have, again, partners come in and talk with us, like Barnes & Noble. We were able to just send letters, get contact with people, call different people, find a human resource or community relationships manager, I guess, and really get in contact with these big corporations, but also to fundraisers. I think fundraisers now are probably the best opportunity if you want to have a book fair. Hold fundraisers, mail out response donation forms to people of interest that you think might donate something to the expo. We're doing the process of doing it now. And also really just talk, word of mouth. The same things as an author would to promote their book or a network like we talked about before. That's what I'm using my experience to do to promote the expo.
Okay, okay. And how do you, Charles, how do you manage to keep a good balance for the expo so that it is something that the reader enjoys, something for the reader, it's geared toward the reader, and it's also geared toward authors? Because there are times I've attended events where I felt like it was more toward the reader and that the authors, we were just a part of this event, but it really wasn't geared toward the authors. It's a place where people just come and sort of browse and just enjoy being out on a sunny day. But the authors who have flown in would also like to move a lot of books. How do you create that balance so that the authors get a lot out of it, they do move a lot of books, and the readers get a lot out of the event as well?
We have authors who have been part of panel discussions. We have authors who have workshops. If they have a poet like myself, again, spoken word. So we try to, ever since I've taken over, and even when the expo before, they've always had authors to, if they have a certain expertise, like a cultural or Christian lit or any other advice you can give, we always made sure they're part of our panel discussions, they're part of our workshops that we started last year. So they can feel they're getting something out of it. And rather than just being there at the event, sitting there for about, I don't know, 6-8 hours and having the same kind of frustrations that you and I have when we walk by our table. My goal is to really create like the LA Times Festival of Books or all the big other book events, but also at the same time, like Dr. Zulu's mission for the expo is to make it a grassroots type of event. So really, it's for the people, but we want the expo for people to enjoy and to grow and to become one of the biggest venues in the West Coast so people can enjoy literature from the black perspective and really come out and support all the authors who have put their work and their heart and soul into their titles and share with stories or whatever they have to share with the audience.
Okay, which leads into the next question. Charles, who are some of the authors who have attended, the Los Angeles Black Book Expo?
Let me see. I can name drop now. we had Leslie Banks last year. She appeared, and we're so grateful for Leslie to come out. She's such a great person. I learned a whole lot from her. We have Michael Datcher, who came out. Maxine Thompson. Maxine Thompson.
Okay.
Who was a good friend of mine. In fact, she's the one who suggested The Depths of My Soul. Title to me when I was in Dr. Rosie Milligan's workshop years ago. Yeah, okay. I told Maxine that. I'm name dropping now.
go ahead.
we have a good up and coming authors too. We have MG Hardy, who's an up and coming author. Shanisha Dobson, who's also an up and coming author. So many people, so many new authors I just love to promote to. And you can find them on our Facebook page, our MySpace page, too, that I'm hoping to promote. Also, the big names that we also have, Dr. Philippa Carr was there. He was a radio talk show host for many years, a progressive radio in Los Angeles. And who else? There's so many people that have gone through the expo.
Okay. What can visitors expect to find at this year's Los Angeles Black Book Expo? And who are some of the people that are going to be leading or speaking at the writing seminars and the educational sessions?
We're still in the early stages. and I don't want to give everything away just yet because we haven't updated our website. But
okay.
I want to say we have, this year we want to turn more towards the digital and viral world of publishing. That's, you know, as you know, the Kindle and
okay.
and all the other digital reading devices are starting to take really starting to affect the landscape of literature right now.
Yeah.
The publishing world. So we were trying to focus more on that. We also have a financial literacy workshop. And I want to mess up Shay's last name. But Shay Oliveira, she's going to do a financial literacy workshop. I hope I said that.
Which
right
is right on time for these times.
Yes, yes.
She's right on time with that.
Oh, definitely right on time. So really this expo this year, we're going to try to focus more on the 21st century. You know, our theme is empowering a new generation through literature, and we want to empower the new generation by, again, the digital reading, publishing, changes in digital from print. We want to change financial literacy, social networking, everything. But we're trying to focus. We're trying to be different this way, where everybody's focused on the printed word. We want to change that and get our authors and writers and publishers prepared for the 21st century, which is, again, going digital.
Okay, okay. You got a lot in store for people who are interested in attending the event. For writers, how can they contact you to have their books promoted at the event, or if they want to attend in person and sell and sign their books? Are you going to have a brochure? Let's say somebody is not able to make it in person, or they have a conflict, another engagement, but they want to have their book advertised in, let's say, a brochure that you're having. Is there a way that people can contact you, writers or publishers, to have a book promoted at the event? And go ahead.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. Yes, they can do that. We're going to change the souvenir booklet, however. If you notice, if you went to the website, we have the prices, and we're going to try to change it up a little bit. That's why I'm telling people to kind of hold off until maybe April or May when we have the website updated. Before then, we'll definitely have that. But as far as sending in payment for souvenir booklets, we want everybody to hold up on that at least for a little while, because we're going to do something exciting that will fit the budget, because we know
okay.
Times are hard, so mm-hmm. we're just trying to change it for them. And you can contact me at blackbookexpo@gmail.com or info@labbx.com, and I can definitely tell these people in person or through email exactly what changes are going to take place. But you know, we definitely want the authors who can't make it a chance, an opportunity to have the works displayed, and we're going to work with that as time goes on. We have until August, so we still have time for that.
Yes, yes. And so people probably maybe even they email you, and the email, of course, I would imagine is at the website as well, so that they can either be put on a mailing list and you send out updates, or they can check back at the website. They say, I'm going to check back in April to see if there are any updates at the website. And if there is further information there, to reach out and become a part of the event, either to attend in person so you can sell and sign your books in person, or attend just as a member of the community just to check out the book festival, or to have your book or an author that you know, if you're a publisher that you support, have their book promoted in the catalog or the brochure. You're also a member. You just are so involved in writing. We only have 11 minutes left, but I wanted to talk about a few other things that you're involved in. And I got to tell you, I'm excited about the LA Black Book Expo. It's the website is so professionally done. I can see clearly that it is a professional event. And thank you again for being involved in that and helping to put that together, Charles. You're also a member of the California Writers Collective. What is the mission or the purpose of the California Writers Collective? You're definitely a man who loves literacy. It's so obvious.
Yeah, I grew up in a library, so that's probably why I'm so much into literature. But the California Writers Collective was started back in 2005. In fact, it's our fifth year. I can't believe it. We, as a group of authors who came together from Northern and Southern California, and we wanted to help each other out. So we decided to form this group called the California Writers Collective. And what we do is that we hold workshops for new authors and aspiring authors and tell them the ins and outs of the publishing business. We tell them about the different publishing options that are available and how to market their work, much the same way that you and I have been talking today. So we try to educate these new and aspiring authors every year, and every year it's something new. Like again, the digital, revolution, I should say, in the publishing business today. And we try to educate them on that. We try to educate them on platform. What is a platform? As you know, that's the big thing now for writers to have that to market their mm-hmm. works, and also all the different trends and tips that basically the writers or the better seasoned veteran writers have to help these aspiring authors and writers tell the story. And they really want to know about how to get the work out and how to get published, first of all. And there's so many ways to get published, like
right.
you mentioned before. And also, too, how to market their work. So that's really the two main things of the workshop that we want to cover, and we try our best. And we've actually published, I would say, for my workshop, two authors have been published because of that.
Wow, congratulations. That must be very rewarding to have a writer come back and tell you that. They attended the workshop unpublished, and then they tell you, because I attended, now I had a book published. That must be a phenomenally good feeling to know you had that type of a role in another writer's life. That is really, really great. I wanted to ask you, for writers who want to sign up for the classes, and we're talking about this digital age, can they sign up and take the course online, or do they have to be in Los Angeles to take the course? How can people who are interested in taking these classes through the California Writers Collective sign up to take and participate in the courses?
They would have to look at our website, CaliforniaWritersCollective.net, and find out when we're going to have not only our workshops, but I should mention our empowerment luncheon as well. We had one in Emeryville last year, and that was very successful, and I can drop her name. Denise Spiller of Universal Press and Productions, who's also a collective member, did a great job coordinating this. And in the Empowerment Luncheon, we try to help new and aspiring authors feel empowered, feel like they have the ability to, again, as we were talking about earlier, have that, possess that power to create images, positive images, and also to bring the facts and the word out, or through the stories or nonfiction, what have you. So we definitely will invite people to log on to CaliforniaWritersCollective.net, and you can see what we have planned for this year. And we definitely plan to go all around the state of California promoting the joy of literacy to new and aspiring authors.
Wow, you are just so involved. I want to make sure I have your website correct. Correct me if I'm wrong. I've been seeing Charles Chapman, but is it Charles L. Chapman? Okay, so to our listeners here, because I want to make this show will air today. It's airing, will air live, and then it will air repeatedly. So I don't want people to get the wrong URL, and they go there and go, okay, wait a minute. She said,
this is
what it is. To our listeners here at Off the Shelf, and thank you to all of you for tuning in here with us. It's CharlesChatmon.com. So correction for myself. Charles L. Chapman, CHATMON.com. That is Charles Chapman's official website. And Charles, again, he is the author of the books The Depths of My Soul, The Voices of South Central. He's a poet, a freelance writer, and a literary entrepreneur. This man just loves literature. He was born in Los Angeles, California, and lived in South Central. He is the executive director of the Los Angeles Black Book Expo, which is scheduled for August 21st this year at the Sheraton in Los Angeles. And you can go to the Los Angeles Black Book Expo website at lABBX.com. I do encourage writers and readers to bookmark it, because they will continue to update it as that August date draws near. As we only have a few more minutes left here in today's show, Charles, I wanted to ask you, what advice would you give to people who are dreaming about becoming a published author? Because a lot of times when we dream about something, that dream state is not, sometimes it's the same, but I would say many times not, than the actual happening of the event itself. What advice would you give to people who are dreaming about becoming published authors, especially writers who might wonder, can they see their books in print and market those books to a large audience? What advice would you give to somebody who's not a published author yet, they're just dreaming about becoming one?
Well, I would suggest that they don't give up on their dreams. And two, if they go to another website that I created, authorsandfocus.com, authors with N, the letter N, and then focus.com, if they go to the resource page, they'll find all the different resources of how people can get into the publishing business, surveys, everything like that. And really, I created Authors and Focus for, as a way for the new and aspiring author to get the information they need so they can become published. Because there are a lot of different people that come up to me and say, Charles, I'm going to get this published. How can I do this? And I just refer them to the website. But first, don't give up on your dream. That's the thing. And then you write. And then just make sure that dream comes true to see your book through to become published.
What did you say? Give us that website again, please.
Authors,
the website you said?
Yeah, authors, N, letter N, focus.com.
Authors in the letter N, focus.com. Authorsinfocus.com with tips
right.
and other advice on how authors can become published and market their works. Again, you are just offering and doing so incredibly much. I want to ask you, we touched on Kindle briefly. What other technological changes and with the growing popularity of the Internet, where do you see the book industry, Charles, 5 years from now? And do you think print books will still be the dominant way that people take in stories and are entertained with stories 5 years from now?
Yeah, I still think that print will always be a factor in how books are sold. I don't think bookstores, even though bookstores in independents are in really bad shape right now, I still believe that printed books will always be part of it. I think as far as Kindle and Nook and even Sony Reader, all those different ones, I think what's happening, if the recent news with HarperCollins pressing Kindle or Amazon to charge the prices for the books, I think there's going to be some problems in the digital world as well, especially how things turn out that way. Because people are going to say, well, if I'm buying this much for an electronic book, I might as well just buy the printed book as well.
Yeah.
And I might as well
spend
$10 more. So I'm still waiting to see how that turns out. But as far as the printed books, they'll always be a part of us. They'll always be part of our lives. So I'm not thinking they're going to disappear from the face of the earth tomorrow.
Right. I know I've heard people say that, and again, with everything, there are challenges and benefits. There are good things about Kindle, and I've heard as well that there are some challenges with it. The same thing, I remember when e-books first came out, people thought e-books were a part of what Kindle is. But before the Kindle, just the simple e-books before Kindle, people thought they were just going to roll over print books, and that didn't happen. But I think the reason Kindle outsold at Amazon a lot of print books this year, Amazon was really pushing Kindle. They were pushing it hard. So it's kind of like if they wouldn't have pushed it so hard and it was still available, would it have outsold their print books? We don't know, because they really, really pushed that instrument. So I wanted to ask, with just a minute remaining, and Charles, I got to thank you for being here with us today. What last words, very briefly, please, what last words of encouragement or advice would you like to leave with our listeners here at Off the Shelf?
Do your research. Never give up on your dream. And just do the best you can in everything that you do. As writing, you know, write because you enjoy it, not because you're trying to make money off it. So if you just hold on to that, then you'll be fine. I want to say very quickly, my wife, Chandra Adams, has a book signing March the 6th at Classic One Books in Los Angeles, and you can email me at charleschapman@gmail.com for the rest.
Okay. Congratulations to – what's the title of her book?
Shades of Retribution.
Okay, Shades of Retribution. Charles Chapman's wife has a book signing in L.A. You can email him. Check him out at his website, charleslchapman.com, and check out the Los Angeles Black Book Expo, which is scheduled for August 21st of this year, and it is online at labbx.com. Thank you so much to Charles Chapman, the author of the books The Depth of My Soul and The Voices of South Central, for being our special guest here today at Off the Shelf. And to each of our listeners, Thank you so much for tuning in to Off the Shelf again. I'm hosting from this snowy day here in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So happy to have you. Please stop in and visit me online at www.chistell.com and check out my new book, Long Walk Up. You can purchase it at Amazon, Cush City, Barnes & Noble, Borders, or at any store. If you don't see it in the shelves, just ask the clerk for a copy because it is carried by Ingram, which is the largest distributor in the country. Thank you again for being here with us at Off the Shelf. Please come back next week when we have Felicia of Felicia Talks. She's worked with the NAACP and other large organization. So please come back. She's an awesome TV journalist that you'll want to hear from next week. Thank you. Remember that you are incredibly blessed, so incredibly valued and loved. Bye for now from Off the Shelf.